This is Stacking the Box with NFL insider Matt Bertaram and Mark Carman.
The divisional round is here, Stacking the Box for your midweek Wednesday. Matt Bertaram, I got to be honest, I'm jumping on the podcast, leaving the Bears' end-of-season press conference. And let me tell you something.
Good?
If you're a football fan, be happy that you are not a Chicago Bears fan, because this is what's going on in Chicago right now is the ultimate. It's not about the GM. It's not about the coach. It's not about the players, unless you luck into, in your case, Patrick Mahomes. You cannot win if the top of your food chain is not correct. And the Bears' top of their food chain has been wrong for oh so long, and it just continues to be wrong. Ryan Pace, Matt Nagy coming back, but that's it's like the Chicago Bears are going. They're preparing to go on a camping trip, Bertaram. Like we are so excited because we can all collaborate together. Like they're gonna go climb Mount Kilimanjaro or something. It's truly incredible.
I bet Bears fans wish they would and then just jump.
Right, like. It takes courage in life to move forward, and maybe you didn't have to move fully forward. Like maybe like, okay, fine. Matt Nagy's over 500. He's been here 3 years. You made the playoffs 6 years, man. Ryan Pace, 6 years, not one playoff win. Listen, I mean, enough is enough.
We're going to get to the teams here that are in the playoffs in a second, but it doesn't take courage to move forward when you're the McCaskies and you're worth like a gajillion dollars. How much courage does it really take? I mean, it's not like you'd be infuriating the fan base by moving on. It's ridiculous. The idea that it takes, and like you were in the presser. I was not. I was following along with all the commentary from the various people I follow that cover the Bears. My favorite quote, and I'm paraphrasing this, was something about that. Yeah, we haven't gotten the quarterback right. Yeah, we haven't gotten the amount of wins we'd like. But other than that, we feel good. But that was a real quote. It's just like. That's like saying, yeah, the car looks good. Didn't put in brakes or an engine block, but other than that, it's great.
Well, and from George McCaskey, top of the food chain, to Ted Phillips, who's the team president, to Ryan Pace, who's the general manager, to Matt Nagy, who's the head coach, they all celebrated that the Bears were able to come out of a six-game losing streak. Like, it was some badge of honor that from – we lost six in a row, but the culture was so good that we won three games at the end of the year to back into the playoffs at 8-8. Meanwhile, when it came to beating a good team in Green Bay or New Orleans, they didn't sniff the game, let alone a victory.
Right.
And oh, you beat the Jacksonville Jaguars. I mean, you had an okay win against the Minnesota Vikings on the road who didn't make the playoffs. You were 1-8 against playoff teams. There's nothing to celebrate here yet. We showed our culture. It's truly unbelievable. It's truly incredible. All right.
Boys are a mess.
I mean, this is
– it was not encouraging. It was not something you walked away from as a Bears fan and went, good, good. Can't wait to see Nick Foles week one, which also sounds like that's coming. So good luck, guys.
It very well might. I'll just say this and then we'll be done. The other part about this for the Bears – and they would deny this, but I think it's a big factor. Follow the money. Nagy signed for two more years.
Oh, yeah, God, they don't want to eat it. Yeah.
They don't want to eat it.
No question. It's always anything in life, follow the money. Always.
Yeah.
They don't want to have to eat the money.
If they were both at the end of their contracts, they would be out. But they're not. What does that tell you? I mean, That is just not the way you – it's not the way you run an organization when you're actually trying to be a good organization. But 35 years, 1985, a long time ago. All right, here we go. Let's go to the Rams and the Green Bay Packers. And the question on the table here is, do we think that Aaron Rodgers is going to struggle against this Rams defense? Now, Aaron Donald's a little banged up here, but I'm sure he'll be out there. Are you concerned the Rams are going to have – or the Packers are going to have a little struggle against this elite Rams defense?
I think the Packers will have relative struggles against them. Now, the Packers have a really good offense. So when I say struggle, I don't think they're going to score 10 points. But I think it'll be hard for them. the Packers have, I think, the best line in the NFC. You could argue along with Cleveland, the NFL. Bakhtiari being out, of course, is a big hit. But that's a great group. That's a powerful group. And really, how many times was Rodgers pressured a lot in these games? I went back and looked. The only game he was really knocked around was the Tampa game. And he threw two picks, and they did score 10 points. Now, the Rams were a much different style of defense. Tampa blitzes a ton. It's a little bit different. But Donald McVay's already come out and said he expects him to be there to play.
Right.
How healthy is he? We're going to find out Saturday. They got Leonard Floyd, who has suddenly become a player.
Bears.
Bears.
Another guy they developed well. Go ahead.
Well done. And then Michael Brockers, who can play. They've got Jalen Ramsey, who can take Davante Adams. Now, look, the argument that gets lost in all this is, well, my God, can the Rams stop him? Okay, I think the Rams can play well defensively. Can Goff, with a broken thumb, go into Lambeau and play well enough to win? That is, to me, the question. Now, to be fair, they just went to Seattle and won, but they got a pick six. Goff threw for less than 50% completion rate. They won in spite of him. They're going to have to win without him being a passenger this weekend. Like, he's going to have to actually help them drive this win. Now, maybe he's feeling better. Who knows? But I think the Packers will be slowed down. It's a very good defense. It's the best defense in football. If they're not slowed down, then we have to even raise our expectations higher of the Packers. And we'll cover the lines later, but I'll leave it at that right now.
So just for the record, if people aren't following super close, Donald's dealing with a rib injury, which
– yes, got hurt in the third quarter.
Yeah, and that doesn't tend to get better throughout a football game. It could, so maybe he looks, maybe he's more impactful early. Obviously, he's going to be doctored up, I would think, to get through the game. Then you got Cooper Kupp with the knee, and then you mentioned Goff with the thumb. He's downplaying that injury, but that to me, to your point, yeah, I don't think Green Bay is going to have their standard offensive day, but they should be able to score enough. Can the Rams actually put up enough points with Goff in this situation? Can they get to, because I think, I don't think you're winning the game 13-10, but can the Rams get to 24, 27, somewhere in there?
Right. I agree.
I expect Green Bay to win the football game. Let's get to Baltimore and Buffalo. And, this is a situation where, are you going to let Lamar Jackson completely control the football game to the point that the Ravens, win time of possession, have 20 more plays. Josh Allen gets in that formula, gets a lot less opportunities, and somehow the Bills are able to snake out with a win. What do you think?
So I think that's the best game of the weekend. And again, we're going to guess, not guess the lines. I just finished listening to the Bill Simmons podcast, which is great. We're going to go over the odds and kind of talk about where we think it might fall. The Bills are going to struggle to stop Baltimore's run game. If they don't, they're going to win going away. But the Ravens, they don't hide who they are. They're not one of these teams that tries to use a lot of smoke and mirrors. It's a lot of, hey, we're coming downhill. We're going to run on first. We're going to run on second. We might run on third. And you've got to stop it. And the Ravens average 5.5 yards per carry in the regular season. Most of any team in the league, easily. They ran for over 3,000 yards as a team. Jackson went over 1,000 yards for the second time in 2 years. I mean, this is a team that can bring the goods running the ball. And Buffalo ranks 22nd in the league in yards per carry against. So I do worry about that. Now, I also think there's an antidote to it if you're Buffalo, and that's bringing down your safeties and in Poyer and in Hyde and challenging the line of scrimmage. The downside of that is if they crease you, he's gone. That's the risk you run with that. Like, you can bring guys down. You can play 8 in the box. But if Jackson gets wide and around the rail, or a guard climbs to the second level and gets the safety blocked, there's nobody stopping him. It's a track meet to the end zone that he's going to win every time. So I do think it's going to be hard for Buffalo to get off the field against him. I think Baltimore is going to rush for a lot of yardage in this game.
It's my top three thing that I enjoy watching on an NFL weekend is Lamar somehow making something out of nothing. And I mean, it's incredibly entertaining. But the other side of it is that if you're a Lamar fan, which I think most of us are, why wouldn't you be? It just feels like at any moment that hit is going to come where he's going to get cracked and we're going to have an RBG, RG3, excuse me, I just got to into politics, moment where it's over. So I don't know why I'm necessarily bringing that up, but it just it doesn't feel built to last at the same time that it feels incredibly tough to stop, right?
Right. No, I agree. Look, I don't think Lamar is going to be a guy who ages particularly well. And it's interesting with him because, and I think we saw all this in the Tennessee game, he can have moments where he looks awful throwing the football. Awful. I mean, the interception he threw against Tennessee is one of the worst picks I've ever seen. I'm not even exaggerating that. Like, it was, he missed that throw by 20 yards to the inside. It was insane. But then he can break off a 48-yard touchdown run on 3rd and 9. He's a game-breaking player. I don't think he's a great quarterback. I don't. But I think he is a great player because he's very hard to deal with. And so his passing ability doesn't scare me at all. But planning for him and stopping him is very difficult. And that's why I do think he's worth a big contract. And I do think that he has to be considered one of the league's best players. Because if you have to spend your whole week game planning to stop somebody, they're a great player.
And then conversely, the other side of this, Josh Allen, speaking of great players, he is very rapidly entering the great player zone.
No doubt.
And this is another opportunity for him to supremely stamp himself. But, I mean, much more versatile than Lamar. I mean, he doesn't run it quite as well, but he can run.
But he can run, yeah.
And he's a problem. I mean, that's a big guy to handle on the move. He can run you over if he wants to. Certainly, if he gets to, you know, if it gets to the point where he needs the first down or at the goal line, he can put his head down and it's a problem.
That's a great point. And I just want to say quick, look, the Ravens blitz more than anyone in the NFL. They are going to come after Allen in this game. They're going to bring it. They play more man coverage than anybody. Like, the Ravens are going to challenge him to beat Marcus Peters and beat Marlon Humphrey. Now, I think he can. But I'm just saying they're going to challenge him. But the reason I brought that up is you said something about his legs. If they blitz him and he gets out of there, that's a very dangerous situation because he's great throwing off platform and he can run. And if you're in man coverage and you have your back to him, there's room to roam. He could be going for a long time.
Right. He'll pick up 30 yards like it's nothing. I mean, those legs are long and they cover a lot of ground and he's not afraid of contact either. So
no.
I think you're right. I mean, as far as it should be a phenomenal game Saturday night. Let's take a look at Cleveland and the Chiefs. The way you're looking at it here is that, you know, can the Browns, I think this is the fair way to look at any team against Kansas City, can they slow the Chiefs down enough?
I think that has to be the question. I know some people might say, well, what about the rushing attack with Cleveland? And look, I think the Browns are going to run the ball some. I don't think it's going to be crazy. The Chiefs actually in their base and nickel packages are very good against the run, and they've been very good the second half of the year, save for one big Melvin Gordon run. So I think the Chiefs will handle that all right. The question for me is going to be, can Cleveland do anything against them defensively? Aaron Schatz over at Football Outsiders, who's a friend of mine, is a hell of a researcher and an analyst, tweeted out that the Browns DVOA-wise defensively are 29th against deep balls. They're 29th on third down passing defensively, and they're 30th against tight ends in general. That's a major problem. They also have the fewest quarterback hits of anybody in the league. Garrett is great. He has 12 sacks. If nobody else with 5. They are 26th in pressure rate. They are going to have to do something that they have not done all year long, which is stop a very good offense. When they played Tennessee, they gave up 35 points. Dak threw for over 500 yards against them, scored 37 points. The Ravens twice, 38 and 47. And that's without a big passing game. So when the Browns have played good offenses, they have gotten absolutely taken to the cleaners. And they were 2-2 in those games. They beat Tennessee and they beat Dallas, to their credit. But Tennessee and Dallas have no defense. Kansas City has at least a league average defense. So, look, to me, this is going to have to come down to them holding Kansas City in the red zone. The Chiefs are going to move the ball at will in this game. It's going to come down to, can Cleveland do what Denver did a few moons ago when they were like, the Chiefs went 0-5 in the red zone. If Cleveland can somehow have a big-time red zone game, and they're average defensively in the red zone, the Chiefs are average offensively. If Cleveland can do something where they're like, I don't know, three of five possessions, they hold the Chiefs to a field goal in the red zone, then you got a shot. But I think that's what it's going to take, because I don't see any scenario other than the Chiefs just pissing down their leg where they don't go for a ton of yards in the game.
I think everybody outside of being a Chief and or Browns fan, this is by far the least interesting game of the weekend. People are, as we're teeing up here, the Rams, you got a puncher's chance here. Maybe even more. Baltimore, Buffalo, kind of feels like a coin flip. Tampa Bay, New Orleans, we got Breeze and Brady. The Browns, I am willing to comfortably write off Cleveland and tell you, Cleveland fans, that phenomenal. You had a phenomenal season. You took a major step forward. And if I'm wrong, that Baker plays a phenomenal game. Chubb goes big. I've been super impressed. I think everybody has with his year. And, you know, maybe Kareem Hunt has revenge on his mind and goes nuts himself. I guess maybe there is some formula in there, but it just doesn't feel overly possible. Let's do Tampa and New Orleans. You're asking, is the third time the charm for Brady and company? And everybody likes to say it's very hard to beat a team three times in 1 year, like that everybody's going to figure out the formula after losing twice. I don't know, man. I haven't been impressed with the Saints that much, but that defense continues to get better and better. I'm pretty skeptical that the Bucs are going to do anything different than they've done the first two times.
So I'm going to pull out a couple stats here and rock the proverbial rim. So to bookend the Chiefs Browns conversation, Chiefs are favored by 10, which we'll get to later. 11 times since 2000, a team has been favored by double digits or more in the divisional round, not including the Chiefs this weekend. Those teams are 8-3 straight up. They're 7-4 covering the spread. Something to think about. The reason I bring that up is now to go into the Saints-Bucks game. I sat here and did some research on company time yesterday, okay? So since 1970, 20 times a team has been going for a three-game sweep of an opponent in the playoffs. The team that was going for the sweep, straight up, 13-7. Since 2000, those teams are 6-2. So the idea that, well, no, there's no way that, you know, the Buccaneers could lose three times. It's got to be the law of averages. No, the law of averages, if you go back through history, says two times out of three, that team loses. That team loses. I think the Buccaneers is a bad matchup for them. They blitz a lot. The Saints get rid of the ball really quickly. And, you know, you always have people say, and I always used to say this until I really started to cover the league in depth and got to know some people in it. Like, there's this process of thought that says, well, why wouldn't you just change then? Teams are what they are. Like, it just, you're not going to play a whole season one way and then in the biggest moment completely change who you are. It's extremely rare that teams can do that. The Pats are great at it with Belichick. They're so amoebic. They play differently every week. They are by far the exception to the rule. Like, if Baltimore plays Kansas City next weekend, I know we have a lot of Chief fans who listen, so I'll use this as the example. Everyone and their mother is going to say, well, they can't blitz Mahomes. They can't blitz. I guarantee you they'll blitz Mahomes. That's just who they are. That's how you're built. That's how the personnel's built. Like, Tampa's not going to all of a sudden start dropping eight. I'd be floored if they do it. And I think the only way that Tampa wins is either the Saints making a bunch of mistakes or Tampa wildly playing a different defense.
Right. And that just seems borderline impossible to do. Like, you're reinventing yourself point here. It just is off the board. And I just want to say that I would love to see Tom have a great game and Breeze have a great game. And let's go old school shootout and let's feel like it's 2010 all over again. But I don't think that's the game we're going to get here. And the Saints, after watching them up close last week versus the Bears, this is a team that I think is very well aware of what they're good at and how they're going to play. And they're not going to ask Drew to do too much. And they, right. I think that, right. You know, they're just not. And having Michael Thomas back matters. I think the Saints win that game by a touchdown plus, but we shall see. Let's go into the future. And we'll make our bets here coming up as well. Which talking point gets flipped on its ear this weekend, Mr. Matt Verderam? Why don't you lay out some of the talking points that you were considering?
So we just went over all this stuff, right? Like that you're hearing a lot of. Can the Packers do this? Against the Rams defense? Can the Ravens be stopped from running the ball?
It is time for us to get rich. Hang tight. We'll be right with you. It's Stacking the Box.
I think talking points are there for a reason. It's typically because they're accurate. Like these teams have done something all year long and they haven't either, or they haven't done something all year long. I'm going to stick close to my heart on this one and my Chiefs. I think the idea that the Chiefs can't stop the run is going to be a rudely interrupted conversation by about halftime of this game against Cleveland. Maybe I end up eating my words on it. It's totally possible. When Kansas City gets in base and gets in nickel, which they will be in a lot against Cleveland because Cleveland runs a lot of two tight end sets and they run a fullback out there, the Chiefs are good against the run. Mike Pinnell is very good inside. Derek Nottie is very good inside. Other than Aaron Donald, Chris Jones is the best defensive tackle in the league. Frank Clark's excellent against the run. Rookie Mike Dan has been excellent against the run at setting the edge. I think the surprise will be, wow, Cleveland only rushed for 100 yards in this game, where I think a lot of people think they'll rush for, 175 plus. I'm not sitting here saying it's going to be a situation where Chubb runs for 20 yards. I'm not saying that. But I do think it's going to be a game where you walk away and go, wow, Kansas City, they really held them in check. I think you're going to see that happen in this game. I think the Chiefs are going to focus on it. And they're going to be able to limit Cleveland's rushing attack, which in turn, obviously, will put a lot of pressure on Baker Mayfield.
All fair. You know what I think is going to happen here, Matt Verderam, in this divisional weekend? I'm going with, let's see here. I guess I'm going to lean into – I'm going to go against you, and I think that out of nowhere, Lamar is going to have a shockingly productive day throwing the football. Lamar Jackson will become a more two-dimensional player after the Baltimore Ravens somehow stun the Buffalo Bills, and there will be a conversation around the lines of is Lamar now more two-dimensional than he ever has been? How's that?
Okay.
It's an off the board play, but I don't know. I don't see anything really being challenged here. So I'm going to take a big swing and say that Lamar has a different type of game here, and the Ravens somehow get it done in what could be the best game of the weekend. Which brings us to what conference title games do you actually want to see? I mean, I'd like to see the Packers and the Bucks tee it up. I don't think that's going to happen. And then in the AFC, I definitely would like to see KC and Baltimore. But as long as the Chiefs get through, that's a sweet AFC title game.
Yeah, I kind of feel the same way. Like I don't really care. And I'm just talking from purely just being entertained. I don't care if the Chiefs play. Like either way, that's a really interesting game. It's Mahomes and Lamar. It's Mahomes and Josh Allen. The Bills are trying to get to the Super Bowl for the first time since 93, trying to win their first one. Jackson in that game, that would be a mammoth step if he was able to win, of course, and get to a Super Bowl. So I agree. I think KC Baltimore is slightly more sexy because Baltimore has gone against the Chiefs now three times, and it's just over and over. They've been repelled. Whereas the Bills, there's not quite that history. But either way, it's exciting. For me, the NFC title game, the most exciting is the Packers and the Bucs. Brady and Rodgers up in the snow in Lambeau. Brady looking for what feels like his 88th Super Bowl appearance. And Rodgers trying to get one more. And I will say this in full disclosure. I'm not rooting for any of those teams. I don't care who gets there. But just from like a storyline level, I'm good on the whole, like Brady and his 10th Super Bowl. I've seen enough of Tom Brady in the Super Bowl. Like I would rather see Rodgers get there from a storyline perspective. I'd rather see Breeze going for one more Super Bowl. Goff trying to get his redemption. Like I don't need Brady, like the book's been written 8,000 times. We get it. He's great. He's won six Super Bowls. That's at least how I feel. Although, again, I think no matter who wins the Saints-Bucks game, if the Packers win, it's a great game. I do think that.
If the Packers don't get there this year as a Bears fan, I'm going to be incredibly pissed. Green Bay belongs in the Super Bowl at least one more time with Aaron Rodgers. He's had a preposterous year. He's going to be the MVP. If they, for lack of a better way of putting it, shit the bed and lose to the Rams or even Tampa or New Orleans, who Green Bay is clearly better than right now. Maybe they weren't better than them in week five, but they are better than them now. That would be enormously disappointing at this point. That's how. So it better be Green Bay in the Super Bowl. And by the way, it also better be Kansas City, because that's a sweet matchup and we all deserve it. Through a pandemic, let's get it going. Mahomes, Rodgers, February 7th, Tampa, Verderam on his couch, talking to his dad. I'm in.
I'm all for it. That would be a great Super Bowl.
So, right?
I mean, listen. And you got to also factor in too, like, it's going to be the highest rated Super Bowl by a mile this year because nobody's going to be having Super Bowl parties and getting together. Everybody's going to be watching from the house. Who the hell is going to be at a bar? Unfortunately, more people than it should be. But
I don't know. Regardless, you see the Alabama celebration?
Listen, I'm going to say this, and I'm going to say this one time at the risk of offending our Alabamians who are listening to this podcast. If you had to pick one state that you think that would happen in, it's fucking Alabama. Is it not?
I'm not entirely certain that that doesn't happen on the campus of Florida, on the campus of LSU, on the campus. I don't know if we could single out also, Alabama.
No, I'm going to single them out. And listen, I like to find people of Alabama. I go down to Mobile for the Senior Bowl on an annual basis, and I love going to Mobile. Okay. But it's more about the culture of Alabama football that I'm driving at here. Like, of course. It's Alabama football fans who, by the way, every single guy there probably had the same haircut with those like beamer bangs that are down to the eyebrows and swiped to the side. Every single one of those people, get a grip. And I'm not telling you not to get together if you're quarantined for a week or so, 10 days, whatever the CDC recommendation is, and watch the games with some buddies. I'm not killing that. Look, I'm not one of these people that thinks you got to lock yourself in a room all day, every day. But to just run out in the street. By the way, you've won, what is it now, 7 titles under Saban or 5 or the hell it is? Like, get a grip. It's not like you've been waiting 100 years to win a national championship. My God, it's like a birthright for that school. How excited could you be?
That's where I went with it. Like, what is this, something new? You do it every year. You've been in the national championship game 5 of the last 6 years. I believe it's 6 titles for Saban with Alabama, 7 total. Like, this isn't new. I'm guessing that 98% of those people were college kids, but perhaps not. I don't, it was bizarre. And look, I get it. You feel invincible, but isn't there like at least 3% of you that doesn't feel invincible and just would rather chill at the crib? Maybe I'm just nuts. All right, back to business here. Doug Peterson out, not that long after winning the Super Bowl, the Eagles, quote unquote, getting the courage, as we rewind back to the start of this podcast, to move on from good old Doug. Was this a mistake?
No, I don't think it was a mistake. I think it had to happen. Like, look, so ultimately, you could go a lot of different ways here and say, well, they went 4-11-1. It's been trending down since the Super Bowl win a few years ago. You could go about the Carson Wentz angle. I more look at it, first of all, in totality, because I think that's the right way to look at it. But also, I look at it like, look, here's the problem. He flat out tanked the game week 17, and the players were furious afterwards. And if you follow professional sports, that's a problem. Like, you lose the locker room and stuff like that happens. Now, a lot of people who are close to that team say that it comes down from on high. Matt Lombardo, who does a great job for us at Fanside, he has an insider column every week. He reported with multiple sources in a column that he wrote actually Wednesday morning that, you know, it was probably coming down from up top. And as far as as Peterson goes, Lori fired him. It wasn't Roseman. Look, regardless of all that, Peterson, the way he coached that team this year, deserved what was coming. I don't care if he won Super Bowl or not. Now, that's not saying he doesn't deserve a second chance. But that specific situation went downhill so fast, I do not blame the Eagles for moving on.
Who's a better coach, Doug Peterson or Matt Nagy?
Doug Peterson, he won a Super Bowl.
Right. I mean, it's not even close, correct?
I wouldn't say it's not close. Because I think Peterson is a little overrated. And I think Nagy as a coach is a little underrated. Like, part of the problem, I got to be fair to Nagy, they have no quarterback. I mean, they're just atrocious at quarterback. But that doesn't exonerate the fact that he coaches a team like he thinks a bomb's going to go off if they throw a forward pass. So I hear that too.
I'm just sitting with the concept that a guy who won the Super Bowl with Nick Foles, by the way, at quarterback after Carson Wentz went down. Now, granted, they had a great offensive line and things were set up for that team, and maybe it wasn't that difficult. But here's Nagy keeping his gig. By the way, Rex Ryan is completely out of his mind. And Doug Peterson moving along. I do think there'll be another opportunity for him, maybe, and maybe in Chicago after next year. All right. Dolphins players are speaking out on Tua. This has been kind of stunning for, you know, a guy who's, you know, brand new to the league. You'd think he'd get a little bit more kid gloves here. And he's also, you know, he's always been a very well-liked Tua. But what's your reaction to what's being said?
It's not good. It's not good. Like, I get their anonymous quotes from players, but it's in the Miami Herald. That's a real legitimate journalistic source. And for players, if people didn't see it, to come out and basically say, yeah, look, like, he does nothing that's special. There's no reason to be excited about him. Like, I don't know, you know, how we are going to beat Allen and Mahomes going forward. That's concerning. Like, red flag, DEFCON 1 concerning. Players are basically, in my opinion, trying to tell the Dolphins, for the love of God, like, he is not the answer. And they're doing it in a way where they're leaking it to the media because they're willing to go there without having to attach their names, which you could say is cowardly, whatever. I would say it's smart because it's self-preservation and you're trying to get a message out. It's not great, man. You don't see this stuff coming out about Burrow and Herbert. No, you didn't even see it coming out about Jalen Hurts. Like, that would deeply concern me if I'm a Dolphins fan.
So, and then Brian Flores, the coach, is saying, quote, I think Tua has made a lot of improvement, really developed over the course of the year. So we'll just try to.
Which he has to say.
Which he does. And then you've got anonymous players. I understand what they said, but I don't understand why. It's like, look, yeah, what you said was right. But, like, what the hell are you doing? Why would you be throwing this guy under the bus when all you're doing ultimately, I mean, maybe it doesn't matter, but it's like you're borderline hurting his trade value. If the Dolphins, if you want to win, you know, I got a lot of thoughts about a lot of people, but it's not necessarily in my best interest to put them all out there. Right. I mean, come on. And also that stuff gets tracked back to, people figure out who's talking. None of it's good. But the bottom line is, the dude can't play. He's not good. So
I don't think he's good either.
So, however soon Miami wants to deal with the, speaking of courageous again, want to deal with the fact that, okay, we swung and it ain't gonna work. Who's next? We're in a position to draft a quarterback again this year. I mean, we'll get into the draft on a later podcast, but it could go 1-2-3 quarterback this year, right?
Yeah.
I think
it's at least got to be said, if you're the Dolphins, you have to do your due diligence on all these quarterbacks coming out. And the other thing is, and look, I'm not a believer that the Texans are going to move Deshaun Watson. I think that thing would have to go beyond nuclear for that to happen. But I got to tell you, man, if I'm the Dolphins, I'm calling. Like, realistically, what would it take? You want your pick back? Because that's the starting point. Here's a third overall pick. Here's our other first-round picks. I think is like 17th or 18th.
Here's two of them. And what else do you want?
Right, and what else? Is that enough? I don't think so. But where do you go from there? I think it's at least have to make that phone call.
And for the Dolphins right there, you, in essence, in my mind, you've given up nothing.
Oh, dude, you do it in 2 seconds.
Yeah, so.
Oh, my God.
What else? How many more first-round draft picks do you want? Two more?
I mean, I'm in on that, too. You're giving them back their first round pick. You're swapping Tua for Watson, and you're just giving up one more first. Now, again, I don't think that's enough.
Right. But I do two more firsts. Is that enough?
Right. Right. I mean, I think if I'm having that conversation.
Yeah.
Like now maybe the Texans hang up the phone, fine, but I'm trying.
Right. I mean, who can actually put the best package together for Watson? And at some point, probably not, because you're talking about a 26-year-old quarterback who led the league in passing yards, is incredibly competitive, incredibly smart, and everything you'd want in a football player. But at some point, maybe there is a package out there that makes sense for the Texans if he really, 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 really doesn't want to be there.
I think it's got to go nuclear, man. He is a top three quarterback in the NFL, in my opinion.
No question. I'm 100%. But speaking of what's going on in nuclear in Houston, look at what's going on with James Harden. I don't think that Deshaun Watson would ever do that. But, I mean, he's –
By the way, on an aside here with James Harden, has the man hit every buffet at every strip joint in Houston?
He does look
large. What is happening? He was gaining 40 pounds.
And he's still putting up numbers, but yes.
I mean, that's fine, but my God. I mean, I saw him. Now, obviously, listen, I follow the Knicks. That's about it in the NBA. I don't go too far beyond that. Like, I saw him warming up yesterday. The man's like an ice truck.
No, he's a big boy.
He's huge.
Yep. Let's make some money. We'll run through the games quickly here. The Rams are a 6.5-point underdog to the Packers. Buffalo is a 2.5-point favorite over Baltimore. Kansas City is the heavy 10-point favorite. And the Saints are a 3-point favorite. Why don't you go for it?
All right. Look, I'll run them right down. If I'm betting these games, and I'm not, if I was, I'd bet the Rams to cover. I would bet the Ravens to cover. I would bet Kansas City to cover, which I know they haven't done in 2 months, but I think they will in this game. I would take New Orleans to cover. I almost want to push it, but that's lame. I'll take them to cover. So I got two underdogs on Sunday, two favorites on Sunday, and two underdogs Saturday. I think the Bills-Ravens game, I'm just taking any points you can give me. I think that game's going to be really, really tight. I could see it being a 1 or 2 point game. I could see Justin Tucker maybe being the difference. On Sunday on this podcast, I said I thought Buffalo would win. I've since been asked twice who I think will win. I've said Baltimore. I will go with Baltimore on a razor's edge. I just think they can run the ball to the point that I think it takes the ball out of Allen's hands. And I think that Allen, as good as he is, as potentially great as he is, you can force him into a mistake here and there. And I think the Ravens' pressure might get him to crack once. And if it does, that might be the game. I like the Packers to win. I think it's close. I think it's something like 27-23, 24-20, somewhere in that range. The Chiefs, I just did the Arrowhead Attic podcast, which you're a Chiefs fan, please subscribe to as well. I think the Chiefs win fairly going away, 38-20. I just do not think Cleveland's going to stop. And maybe it's 38-27 or something, a late touchdown. I think the Chiefs will cover. New Orleans and Tampa, give me, I don't know, 28-24, something in that range. But I do think the Saints will win. I think they'll sweep them.
This is where I'll be the least interesting person on the podcast in the history of podcasts. I'm going and I just said 5 minutes ago that Baltimore is going to have a big day from Lamar. But as 5 minutes later, as Lord knows, nobody knows what the hell is going to happen in these games, I've just floated back to Green Bay is going to smoke the Rams. I don't think the Rams can
smoke.
I think they're going to crack them. I think Buffalo, if I had to put money down, I would what I detailed earlier is the way in which Baltimore can win. But if I had to bet, I'm riding with the Bills. I better football team, had a great year, and I almost think that game could go Buffalo's way in a big way. Kansas City, what's up, man? Are you gonna finally come out and wax a team? I think you do. So Chiefs by a lot, and I actually like the Saints by a lot. I don't see Tampa being able to have I think that defense gives the Bucs a whole lot of problems, and I don't see Tampa stopping the Saints.
At least of not. Those four teams, since you just picked the favorites and you think a lot of them will be big wins, which team scares you the most? Which one are you most confident in?
I would say I'm most confident in the Packers and least confident in the Saints.
I hear that.
Quick time out. Stay with us. You are listening to Stacking the Box.
I'm most, just in terms of winning the games, I'm most confident Kansas City's going to win. I just do not see. Now, you want to talk about covering whatever we got in terms of winning the games.
Sure, but
I think Kansas City is my safest bet. I think the Bills Ravens to me is the biggest toss up.
Yeah,
that game to me, you could sell me on that game going a million different ways.
I mean, just because of what's happened all season long, I think that Cleveland can somehow keep it within 10. I feel
right. They could.
I don't think they're gonna win. But if you're asking me most confident, and the Chiefs just haven't – they have not rightfully blown teams out this year.
I'm just talking about winning the game.
But, yes, winning, of course. Kansas City's like light year. I mean, they're way out in front that way. Let's do some in or out. Ben Roethlisberger will be the Steelers quarterback next season. I mean, granted, they were down 28-0, and all they had to do was throw the football. But he did throw for 500 yards, for the record. We didn't mention that on Sunday night.
He threw 68 attempts.
68 balls, baby.
I mean,
in or out, baby.
His cap charge is $41 million. He's going to earn $19 million. I think he's coming back.
What do I?
I think he's coming back. Like, people overthink this crap all the time. It's a lot of money. And I think he'll give it one more run. I think he'll play. I will say this, though. I think they're done. They are going to have to rebuild in a major way with their cap situation. So I think he does come back. I don't think it ends well. I think it ends with them going like 8-8 at best, and that's it.
Ride it out. One more year of Big Ben. I think that is I don't think that, speaking of courage, I don't think the Steelers are ready to move on from Roethlisberger, especially because of
And like, what are you going to? Rudolph? Right. Who cares?
And the NFL free agent quarterback pool is weak as weak can be, unless you somehow are going to get Dallas to do
he's
something.
He's not going anywhere.
He's not going anywhere. I don't think Watson's going anywhere. So next up, that would be Mitchell Trubisky. So Big Ben, I think you're going to do it one more year. The Chiefs are a better bet to win the Super Bowl than the field. Wow. The odds would tell you absolutely not.
Right.
But if you told me I can bet the field and you get the Chiefs, you can go first here, but I don't think I'm doing it.
I'm going to annoy a lot of Chief fans. I would take the field. For the simple fact that the odds are just in your favor. But I thought it was a fun question to pose and just kind of – now, I do think that if you said you got to pick one team, I'd pick Kansas City. I think the Packers have a real shot, though. Like, the Packers are the one – I think the Packers could beat them. I would pick Kansas City against anyone. The one thing, though, that if you want to take the Chiefs over the field, I do think helps you is if you think like most of America thinks, okay, and I get it, upsets happen, the Chiefs should ear hole Cleveland this weekend. They should. Everybody else, in my opinion, has a game they could lose this week. Where Kansas City, if they lose to the Browns, I'm gonna be on the floor in the fetal position for a month. I just cannot imagine them blowing that game. And so if you feel that way, the Chiefs have a big leg up over everybody else. That said, I take the field because I just believe in the NFL playoffs, it's a one-game thing. Anything can happen. You just give yourself more shots at that apple, more odds. But yeah, listen, I couldn't blame you for taking Kansas City, and certainly as a Chiefs fan, I'm happy to ride with their chances here.
Well, I'm wrong for the record here. You play the odds here, you take the field, but like, do I take Kansas City in the NFL over the field? Yeah, I do. Do I take the Lakers in the NBA over the field? Yeah, I do. Do I take New England most years over the field? Yeah, I do.
Knicks over the field?
Not the Knicks, but shame. The 70s Knicks, the Red Holtzman Knicks, I might. So
I might take the 70s Knicks right now over the current Knicks.
Yeah. So
I was really high on them. That 3-game losing streak I've showered.
Tibbs will get it back rolling, baby.
I know. I'm just kidding.
I just like having I've got the best team. Yeah, okay, somebody can get hurt. Yeah, they could have a bad day. I'll put my money on Kansas City in 2020/Super Bowl 2021. This question's crazy by you. Alabama could keep a game within 10 points against an NFL team. So let's make it this way. The Jets, we've got seven Jets or seven Jaguars with COVID. The game is in Bama, and it's on a Sunday, we'll make it on a Thursday, but Bama played last Tuesday, so they have more rest, and the NFL team's coming in on 3 days rest. Your thoughts?
The NFL team would win by 30. Oh, listen. No, I put this on here because people always go down these roads, like when a dominant team in college wins it. Look, Alabama is ridiculous. Alabama is probably literally going to put 25 to 30 kids on an NFL team from that roster. They're insane. And six or seven of them be great players. But the key is the word will. Like, Mac Jones is not going into any game in the NFL right now and beating an NFL team, an NFL defense. I mean, yeah, if you play the game 100 times because you have like a miracle on ice scenario, maybe. Like, in an NFL game against a college team, you would have 30-year-old men with grown ass strength who are playing against some 19-year-old redshirt freshman. Just the mismatches would not be where the stars in the college game are. It's where, oh yeah, Bama's left guard is not good. And oh, by Quinnen Williams is going against him, or like Aaron Donald's going. You know, that's where, to me, the whole thing falls apart.
If you took a college all-star team, you'd have something. Give me Trevor Lawrence. You know, give me the best offensive linemen you can line up, who are going to play in the league. That team could win, but just Bama is a little crazy. Although, that basically is a college all-star team. How many – didn't LSU have 15 guys drafted last year, or 15 guys ended up in the NFL?
It's something ridiculous. That conference is just ungodly. But what would the point spread have to be for you to pick Bama? Again, not with all the crazy parameters, but just Bama and the Jets Sunday afternoon, 1 o'clock. How much would you have to
– 21. 21 I'm in.
I need 28. But I'll tell you, like – if Adam Gase is the head coach, maybe it's 14.
I think it'd be really cool if that was like in European soccer, you get relegated. Like if you're the worst team in the NFL, you have to play a college football team, and the college players get to play that game and they get all the dough. Like that's a way that the NCAA gets paid. Maybe, I don't know. I think that would be highly entertaining if every year you had, and maybe it was just like a college all-star game. Like if you got selected into it, the NFL team wouldn't want to play. The college kids would love it. All right. Super Wildcard Weekend was a success, not watered down football as we added on playoff teams. I'm not minding it myself.
I liked it. I liked it. I thought it was a success. I won't go super deep on this one. I think it was successful. I thought that everybody bitched up a storm when the NFL expanded the playoff picture, and I thought it was fine. It was fun. I could have done without seeing Mitchell Trubisky. I could have done without some of the bad quarterback play we got, you know, but overall, I liked it. I thought it was good. I thought it was entertaining. Give me more football.
I mean, if we didn't have the expanded playoffs, we would not have seen Javon Wims drop a would-be touchdown pass, which was highly entertaining. We wouldn't have seen – I mean, Colts-Bills was a great game. So, you know.
Right, absolutely. Yeah, it was the best game of the weekend, in my opinion.
So, it delivered 100%. And I think I actually like the reward for the one seeds. Like, that's a real reward. It's – the way it's set up, I think, is actually very good. So congratulations, NFL. You did not blow it by expanding the playoffs.
Right.
What's up, Verderam? You're in the divisional round.
Yeah. Look, I'm ready for the Chiefs. I'm always ready to get hurt. I'm always terrified because there that part of me as a Chief fan will never leave. Like, I was just looking at Nate Taylor, who's a buddy of mine who covers a team for The Athletic. He was tweeting out that he doesn't see Rashad Fenton. He doesn't see Sammy Watkins. And it's like, all right, I can live like Rashad Fenton's not the end of the world. He's a good slot corner. But, like, of course, Sammy Watkins, who had a calf injury that everybody and their mother in week 16 is like, yeah, it's fine. And it's, here we are a month later, and Sammy Watkins can't get on the field. Like, that's always fun. Now, do I think they, you know, they should be able to win without it? Yeah, I mean, they should, yes. But Clyde Edwards-Helaire is practicing, so that's good. That was expected, but that's still nice to see him back. And you know, if he's out there Wednesday, unless there's some weird setback, he'll play. But, yeah, listen, I expect the Chiefs to win, but come Sunday, 2 o'clock Central time, I will be physically nauseous to the point that Josh Hill, our lovely co-worker, took me off the schedule for the game because he knows I will be utterly useless. So I am not even covering the Chiefs game. I'm just going to be sitting there, I'm sure, on the phone with my dad, just screaming at the television. So looking forward to it. Looking forward to having a blood pressure of, 200 over 180 during the Chiefs game.
Congratulations. That's what life's all about, baby. Ride the roller coaster. Enjoy that blood pressure. I think that that's exactly where you should be come Sunday afternoon. I just want to say that, you know, the Chicago Bears, they finished the regular season 8-8. They lost in the playoffs. That's 8-9. And what happened today, I think they're the first team in the history of the NFL to go 8-10. That literally that literally should be on some level of Wikipedia scorecard. Bears press conference 2021 or 2020 season ender loss. McCaskey, Phillips, Pace, Nagy. It really, like, Matt Nagy is, I think, 28-20 as the Bears head coach. It should be 28-21. And it's not entirely his fault. And they were in a no-win position, but they today, like, it was not going to go well if they were going this route. But that was a straight loss. So, football season over in Chicago. And I went and you'll like this one, Verderam. I went and wanted to give my guys Hamp and OB a little end-of-season respect gift, because OB normally gives me – Ed Obradovich played for the 63 World Championships Bears. He's 80 years old. He gives me a bottle of Crown Royal every year. He's like, it's smooth, Mark, it's smooth. So I go looking for a bottle of wine for the guy. Yeah. And I go in yesterday, and they're like – and I'm like, let me get a Cabernet. Let me get a full body here. And they're like, how about – and I'm like, what's up with that one, the dude? Oh, it's great. The dude's I'm talking to the sommelier or whatever – so I bought – the wine that I bought was The Dude, and supposedly it's incredible. So if you find The Dude on your local supermarket shelf, give it a spin. It's a red blend, Verderam, and then I went across the street and got him a cigar. And I picked up for the good cigar, and I – you know, cigar smokers, sometimes I guess they know these things. So I hand it to him. He's like, oh, this is the – he was super excited because I didn't spend $1 or $3 on a cigar and got him a decent
tell you what, man. Love a good cigar.
Do you?
I do love good cigars.
Were we smoking them last year at the Super Bowl? Were you in that crew?
I was smoking them. I don't know if I was smoking them with you, but I was smoking them. They were down in Miami, and they had
– it was awesome.
They were hand-rolling cigars.
Yeah.
And I got like six of them. And I smoked a bunch of them that night, Tuesday night at media night, and I smoked them to the point – I've never done this before since.
Oh, yeah, you got sick.
I got sick. I didn't puke, but I felt like I was going to. I had to stop. I smoked like four of them. And, you know, I'm used to that bullshit we get around here at stateside, but those things were like legit cute. I was just huffing away, man. Huffing, rumming cokes, talking to people. It was great. I had a great time. Smelled like a walking cigar for about 3 days after that, but it was good. Had fun. Every time I go to Indy, there's a little cigar lounge. I won't even say the name of the place. It's kind of tucked away. It's a good place to go at Sources. But you go there, get a nice little room, some couches, a table. They got a whole menu. You drop like $50 on a cigar. It's fantastic. Have a little bourbon. Oh, it's good times, man.
You've spent
let me tell you, stories are told in that place.
Oh, I believe that.
You spent $50 on a cigar?
Yeah, man. It's taken care of by the company. I mean, we get an allowance. I just eat cheap. Yeah, you're damn straight.
I love it. All right, I got money to burn. I'm going $50 cigar. I can't.
That's right.
You can't really tell the difference, right?
You can.
I mean, I'm sure like the diehards can, but a Matt Verderam.
No. I can tell the difference. If you get starting, you get into that kind of a range, you can tell the difference. Okay. Like I won't say who, because obviously that would be a breach of journalistic ethics here. But I went a couple of years ago, and we met with two pretty high profile sources, and they go there every year to the point that they have their own little cigar closet that they use for like 2 days out of the year that the place keeps for them. And they just started pulling out like these very, very expensive cigars. And like, here, just take them. Like I at first I was like, no, I can't. Like that thing is, I had to have been at least $75. I was like, I can't. He's like, no, don't worry about it. It's cool. I got an endless supply of them. And started smoking them, sitting there, man, I'll tell you a couple stories off the air about this, but it was great. We were there all night, had a great time. But yeah, you know, those cigars are high class. Plus too, you got to spend the money on the cigar. Cause if you're there with a source who's got some money, and let's face it, most of them do, if not all of them, you can't be the guy getting a $6 cigar, right? Like already they're looking at you. You've got to spend to make them be like, all right, this guy, all right. Okay. Cool, right? Like,
can't you just say, I'll take the, and then they don't know exactly what you went with?
No, you got to order it. And they come over and they got those, you know, those lighters that are like basically blue flames. And
yeah,
you got, you know, they cut it for you and the whole nine. And so, no. Like, you both have the menu. They know exactly what you're ordering.
Okay. I get it. You gotta piss with the big boys. I feel like we're in parenthood right now with little Jason Robards, and I'm throwing another weird old school movie reference as we say goodbye here, because Sean Daly, who's producing the podcast, wants to go, I'm sure. Maybe it is Robert Duvall.
Damn it.
I'm going to The Natural.
Redford?
No. Who was the reporter? Max Mercy. They come and they go. Isn't that Duvall?
Think so.
Max Mercy, The Natural. I should, Robert Duvall. Thank you very much, Carm. You have zero confidence, and that's terrible that you even had to question yourself there. But he had like that wet cigar, just like old school baseball scribe, made it look so incredibly fun. Like that's just what cool people do. So you're officially a cooler guy to me right now, Verderam, with you hanging out in cigar lounges with big-time NFL shooters spending $50 on a cigar. Congratulations.
Hey,
do it again. Good luck to your Chiefs this weekend, by the way. And thank you to everybody for listening to Stack in the Box. We love you. And we appreciate all the reviews, which we didn't mention today. But on Sunday, we're going through your reviews.
We're going through the Chinese food reviews. There's a lot of them to get to. The show is just so packed. But don't think we forgot about you. We're going to get into that. We're going to have a good time.
I'm looking forward to it. Everybody enjoyed the division weekend. We'll talk to you Sunday night.